It's all about the jobs.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiotakis. It's the morning open, a look at the economy as markets open for the day. Let's dive right in with a question. Where's Wall Street? Numbers are up right now. The S&P up about 1%. The NASDAQ up 1.5%. The Dow adding 112 points right now at 99.15. European shares are lower, I should say higher right now. 0.33% for the FTSE, and the CAC 40 in Paris up about 0.33%. Asian stocks closed mostly lower today. American business productivity grew last quarter at the fastest pace in 6 years, and new jobless claims fell to a 10-month low last week. Richard DeKayser is president of Woodley Park Research. He joins us live from Washington right now. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning, Steve.
So a couple of things at work in the labor market: higher productivity and fewer people claiming jobless benefits. I mean, what does this tell us about the overall shape of the economy?
Well, it tells us that the labor market is improving in some respects. You know, it's hard to get excited about 500,000 people filing claims for unemployment insurance, which is what they did last week. But relative to where we've been, that is a huge improvement. That's the lowest number we've seen since January. And when smoothed out, like economists like to do, on a four-week moving average, it's the lowest level in a year. So we're certainly not in a good labor market, but it's an improving one.
Yeah, we're looking at the trend, right?
That's right.
So we also saw, Richard, that as a part of the weekly jobless report, there was really no uptick, no gain in wages. Inflation doesn't appear to be a threat for the moment anyway. So does that suggest to you that the Fed has a little room to keep interest rates steady?
Absolutely right. You know, we got labor productivity, which soared during the third quarter because wages were not rising at the same time. That means unit labor cost, how much businesses are paying workers for an hour of their time, declined almost 4% over the past year, have posted their lowest increase since the series was recorded in the 1940s. And that really strongly suggests that inflation is not a threat, as some might perceive it to be. And that implies, as the Fed just told us themselves yesterday, low interest rates are here to stay for an extended period of time.
All right. Richard DeKayser joining us from Washington. Richard, thanks.
My pleasure.
Here we go again. Big bonuses are back on Wall Street, at least for some financial workers. A report out today from compensation consulting firm Johnson Associates in New York predicts the typical year-end bonus will be up about 40% this year. That's setting up a clash with regulators and with lawmakers and, of course, public opinion, as Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports.
Bonuses had fallen in the recession as firms had less to offer and regulators cracked down, but they're now creeping up again between 40 and 60% in sectors like investment banking, bond, and stock trading. Andrew Hilton of the Center for the Study of Financial Innovation in London says regulators are under tremendous pressure to give Wall Street a looser leash again.
Because it is said the crisis is over. And plenty of institutions have been going around making the case that if they don't pay enormous sums of money to their staff, they will lose those staff to other institutions. The usual scare stories that we've heard before.
Hilton says regulators have the most leverage over firms like Bank of America and Citibank that got huge government bailouts to stay alive. But he says even companies that didn't get direct cash assistance have benefited from the government refloating of financial markets, so their pay should be scrutinized as well. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Listening to the Marketplace Morning Report for Thursday, November 5th, 2009, at marketplace.org. Latino workers over 50 were among the first to be laid off when the recession hit. Now, the AARP is focusing attention on these so-called invisible boomers. It's holding a forum today on this issue in Washington, as Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genzer reports.
The AARP has just released a report that says the unemployment rate for older Hispanic men has almost tripled since 2007. Richard Johnson of the Urban Institute wrote the report.
And so I think older Hispanics actually get hit with this double whammy. They sometimes face discrimination because of their ethnicity, and then sometimes they face discrimination because of their age.
51-year-old Ricardo Bonao worked as a pharmaceutical sales rep for 19 years before losing his job about a year and a half ago. He came to the U.S. legally from Cuba at age 4. Still, many would-be employers think he's undocumented.
It's funny. Everybody thinks you came over on a boat or something, or you came here illegally.
But the AARP says older Hispanics may have some advantages. Most are bilingual. They're a growing part of the workforce, and employers will need them to fill worker shortages expected in the near future. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
For a personal take on this issue, check out Marketplace later today. Commentator Gustavo Arellano tells the story of the economic challenges facing one Mexican-American boomer, his dad. We're getting some more data in today on home prices. The real estate valuation company Clear Capital's released a report that finds home prices nationwide are softening heading into the traditionally slow winter season. And Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson reports that's not necessarily a bad thing.
The report says, on average, home prices are down more than 8% from this time last year. Alex Villacorta is senior statistician at Clear Capital. He says the good news is the period of huge swings in home prices appears to be ending.
The high gains that we saw during the summer are now coming down a little bit, showing a more traditional ebb and flow of seasonal cycles, something that we haven't seen since the downturn began more than 2 years ago.
He says that could mean an L-shaped recovery in the housing market, so 30% below the peak may be the new normal. I asked housing expert Andrew Jakubowicz at the Center for American Progress if this means the housing crisis is ending.
The answer to that question, is, I think, is much more a function of the broader economy and job growth, as opposed to having so-called toxic mortgages still on the books that have yet to make their way through the system.
And we'll get an idea of how well we're doing on the labor front when the big October jobs report comes out tomorrow. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Hyatt Hotels launches an initial public offering today. The company's in pretty good shape, though the hospitality business has suffered some in the recession. More importantly, though, IPOs haven't been doing very well lately at all. We asked Elisa Roth to take a closer look.
When the economy fell apart last year, companies pretty much stopped going public because nobody wanted to buy risky stocks. Now the market is doing better, but investors are still too nervous to put their money into untested companies.
This is almost the equivalent of discretionary spending in the equities market.
David Menlow is president of IPOfinancial.com, a research firm.
IPOs are suffering as not an essential item, but a luxury.
Some of the potentially riskiest IPOs are coming from private equity firms. David Snow follows private equity for a trade publication. He says they're desperately looking for cash.
Because of the downturn, they've held many of their investments in these funds for quite a while, and they're very eager to either sell them to large corporations or to take them public.
Investors are worried that eagerness could make private equity firms try to push IPOs that aren't ready for the big time or misprice them. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
Carmaker Toyota today said it is profitable again. It's adjusted its outlook a little higher with that news. Thousands of German auto workers walked off the job today, protesting General Motors' plans to scrap its deal to sell Opel to the Canadian auto parts maker Magna. Workers feared job cuts either way, but the nixing of the deal throws more uncertainty into the mix. Let's speak with Financial Times European business correspondent Richard Milne, who's with us from London. Hi there.
Yeah, good morning.
Now that the deal is off the table, how does this all play out?
Yeah, well, absolutely. I think in Germany, the feeling was, in a sense, that they were kind of protecting their jobs, in a sense. And that actually caused some anger in other European countries. So you're seeing today, for instance, UK workers rather happy because the GM plan will probably mean fewer job losses in the UK. But the place where there's real anger is in Germany. You've got the fears that as many as two factories could be closed in Germany. And Magna, of course, didn't want to close any.
And a lot of these German states are competing against one another to see which have factories close and which ones stay open, right?
Absolutely. One of the more peculiar things about this is there's a factory in the former Eastern Germany called Eisenach. This is actually the most efficient GM factory in Europe. And at the moment, it's one of the two that looks most likely to close.
If the factory is so efficient, why would GM want to close it?
Well, that's always a question in the car industry, and it kind of underlines everything that's wrong in the car industry, I suppose, particularly in Europe. I mean, I think what you've seen in the US is a very, very brutal restructuring with both GM and Chrysler going through bankruptcy. And what we're seeing in Europe is really much more of a muddling through. You haven't had any car factories close here during this crisis. You haven't had any car makers go out of business. And I think that's just storing up problems for the future.
Richard Milne, European business correspondent at the Financial Times in London, we do appreciate you being with us.
Thank you.
And finally, the New York Yankees are world champs again.
To the second baseman, Cano. The Yankees are back on top. World champions for the 27th time.
It's part of last night's broadcast on Fox. Bad for the Phillies, but according to one researcher, good for stocks. The New York Times quotes Richard Peterson from Standard & Poor's Capital IQ, who says, every year the Yanks have won the World Series. Since 1936, the S&P tacked on an average of 10% the following year. When they lost the championship, it tanked the following year by an average of 13%. From Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.